Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peep State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peep State Pandemonium.
This is Michael Norris, and so far I'm joined only by one of my co-hosts. Gary Oates is with me. I'm not sure what's going on with Bobby. I haven't heard from him since I talked to him, I think, at the end of last week. I know his wife is scheduled to have surgery on one of her hands on Monday, so he may be tied up with something dealing with that. So, or maybe he'll join us in a little while. We'll see. How you doing, Stephen, here?
I'm doing great, Mike, and you?
Just wonderful. Just wonderful. Sun would ever come out of here in Florida. But for it being the Sunshine State, I hadn't seen my son in the last week and a half. It's been overcast with heavy rain. The sun will peak out, but when the rain's covered, or the clouds covered back up. I got two more weeks down here, and then head back to the Gulf Coast, and I'll be back on the road, I guess, in February, first part of March next year. So, but this has been fun. This has been
really fun. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it.
It is. There's a lot of similarities from the wrestling business to the circus business, and I mean that in a good way. I mean,
oh, I'm sure.
You know the traveling, seeing different parts of the country has been great. When I was in the wrestling business, I worked all over the Southeast, but I never really traveled much beyond north of Tennessee and west of Mississippi. So, not like you. You covered the whole country.
Well, it was an interesting run, I'll tell you that.
So what have you been up to?
The weather here in Savannah's just been absolutely gorgeous. Cool at night and about mid-70s during the day, no humidity, and it's just been, you couldn't ask for any better weather.
I guess Bobby may be in mourning over the Georgia Tech. It lost one this weekend, didn't it?
I think they did.
I think they did too. I know Alabama won.
You can watch that game Saturday night.
I'm debating. I always bring them bad luck when I watch them. First one, a tough team. That's gonna be a good game, I think.
Yeah, I hope it is. I really do.
I'm pulling for Alabama, but I don't know. LSU's been on such a tear this year.
Both of them are good.
As long as they beat Auburn, that's all matters to me.
Oh, well, that will happen. You can
I don't
bet
know.
On that.
No, I don't know. Alabama has a history of you know, dominating other teams and then just not doing well with Auburn. And so that's just the way they are sometimes.
Well, their quarterback's gone, so. Of course, he was a pro when he was there.
Where did he end up?
Carolina.
How's he doing there? I haven't heard of the thing.
He's doing good. I mean, he really is. Of course, that team, you know, they got a new coach. Ron Rivera's the new coach, and he'll get that thing turned around. And I think they'll be pretty good.
Do you follow baseball much?
Yes.
Did you watch the World Series?
Yes, I did.
I was pulling for Texas. I just wanted to.
I was too. I was too, Mike.
I had hoped that it would come down to Detroit and Milwaukee playing each other because neither one of those teams had been in. And then when it came down to St. Louis and Texas. Usually I pull for a National League team, but having lived in Atlanta for all those years and followed the National League, but I wanted Texas to do it.
I did, too. I really did.
But you have to give it to St. Louis. And La Russa, I guess, has decided to go out a winner.
He had a heck of a run.
That he did. How long was he there, Coach?
I don't know how long he was there. He was coaching totally 33 years.
Wow.
He started off with Chicago.
He was a player as well, right?
Do what now?
He was a player as well, right?
Yeah, but he didn't last long. And that's why he went to law school, because he thought his career in baseball was over. And then he became a lawyer, and then he got back in baseball. And then he was the manager of the Chicago White Sox, then went to Oakland, and then to St. Louis.
Yeah, I remember that's when I first became aware of him, when he was with Oakland. That was during the days of McGuire and Seiko and all those guys.
Yeah, he won World Series in both leagues, so that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, I didn't get a chance to watch all the games, but I didn't watch that one that was so back and forth. But, man. I heard that was one of the best baseball games anybody had seen in a long time.
It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, that's when Texas should have put them away, but just didn't happen.
You know, it's funny, when they lose heartbreakers like that, it always swings the momentum, and the ones that win it, they usually end up winning the series.
I think it takes something out of you. You're right.
Because I think, you know, all those times that the Braves went, you know, how many times in the sixth game, you know, they would lose it at the last minute and then just did not pick themselves back up.
They went to some World Series, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I sat and threw a lot of TV. I don't have any more, but I videotaped, and I did this every year. You know, once I got to the sixth and seventh games, I would videotape the last game, or what I thought was going to be the last game, hoping they win, or submit the defense. I rushed it. I did have the year they won, I did have that game on videotape many years, so I lost all my videotape in a flood. I had
really?
Back porch and threw a bad rainstorm in Mobile. It blew the roof off, or the corner of the roof off, and water just poured in there and ruined all tapes that I couldn't get to save.
Well, that'd be tough.
I did the same thing when the Falcons played the Super Bowl. I recorded that. And, of course, they didn't win, so.
Well, you're bad luck when it comes to taping stuff, aren't you, for your teams?
What's that?
I said you're bad luck taping your teams.
That's true. And as I never taped any college games or anything. So, I'm a jinx on Alabama when I watch them. I tend to be. Especially if I bet on, which I've only done a handful of times. I learned my lesson many, many years ago against betting on them.
Well, that's like this game Saturday. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
That was always about seven. That one would be a hard one. That's going to be a hard one to watch, too. That's the reason I'm debating, because it'll go, you know, one or the other will dominate, or it's going to be, somebody's going to win it at the last second, and I'm afraid if it goes down to the last second, it's going to be LSU that wins it.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch. I know that.
Yeah. Aaron, co-host is on the line. Let me get him on here with us. Daylight savings time is not till the weekend. So.
Don't pay the ransom. I've escaped. Fellas, I had a funeral this afternoon, and I had a member in the hospital that I had to go see to do surgery on in the morning, so I have just got home.
Oh, wow.
Plus, it's decided to pour down rain up here, so you know how traffic is in Atlanta when it rains.
You've had a fun day, haven't you?
It's just, the fun never ends, man. You know, pastors and churches don't do nothing except wear a suit and speak on Sunday.
Well, I can vouch that that's not true of our church.
Well,
I've run the road with Bobby a few times. It wears me out just riding with him.
Sad situation. I had a funeral last Wednesday. A member of our church, 93 years old, passed away. And on my way to the church, this young man that from the neighborhood there that had been to church a time or two, he made a point to step out off the curb when he seen me to wave at me and holler at me and speak to me. And 32 years old. And the next day, the young man, they found him unconscious, comatose. They don't know if it was they're not sure if it was drug related or if he had an aneurysm rupture. They did an autopsy, but they don't have the results yet. But it's been a long week. But anyway,
so
you guys are wimps. Y'all want to know who's gonna win that game Saturday night?
Yes, sir.
The team with the most points.
Well, you.
That's usually how it works.
Just call out to Vegas and tell them you want money on the team with the most points at the end.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll go for that.
Oh, you know they will.
Well, what's next up for Georgia Tech? I have to get this in for Rich Tate's from doing this tonight. I have to get all my Georgia Tech.
They play Virginia Tech a week from tonight on national TV. And if they beat Virginia Tech, they pretty well sew up their division in the ACC. Do what?
Have they lost just the last two games?
Well, they lost three in a row. They lost to crap, who beat them? I can't even keep up with it. Virginia beat them. Miami beat them. Yeah, that may be the only two. I think they're 6-2. I think that's right. Yeah, they've just lost two.
I think the last 2 weekends are the only
game they won. They just absolutely took Clemson to school last Saturday night.
I don't know, where are they playing next week?
Here in Atlanta.
You going?
It depends. They're doing surgery on my wife Monday. And it's going to depend on how she's doing. I may have to come home, so I'm not sure yet.
All right. Well, speaking of Rich Tate, I'm going to get him on the line with us. We're going to talk about the class of 2011 for the Georgia Wrestling History Hall of Fame. And
I was trying to be nice. That's really why I'm late, because of that list today. There was two brothers on that list, and every Tater I ever got come back to my memory, and I've been achy all day.
You lying dog.
Rich, you there?
I'm here, folks. How you doing?
All right.
Hey, Rich.
I'm doing well. Nice to know we got two Hall of Famers now on the crew.
That we do. I have to say, Bobby let the cat out of the bag, but congratulations to Jerry Oates, he and his brother, for being
Well, we're both honored and elated and very proud of that. We want to thank everybody that had a hand in voting for us, and we mean that from the bottom of my heart, really.
Now let's hope the check doesn't bounce.
Yeah. We'll get into this as we go through the list. But looking at all the names on here, you can basically say that this was the year of the crowbar.
Oh, wait a minute. Rich waited to put this whole thing together right.
Well, Rich, tell us a little bit how the Georgia Wrestling Hall of Fame came about, and how the nominations are done, how the selections are done, and the voting and all that. I tried to explain it last week, and I muddled it up so bad. People probably never figured it out.
Well, it all got started kind of like GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com got started. I just kind of lost a bet, and I had to go deal with it. I'm the one that gets to make nobody happy at any time. We started nine years ago yesterday, and the first year in, we it's kind of evolved over the years. The the beginnings of it were pretty humble. It was me and some historians, and you know, Chuck Thornton being one of them. I believe at that time Mike, you, and Bobby may have been on the committee on that first time around. I don't remember, but when we first started doing it, you know, we were kind of still rolling the site out year by year. And we kind of got started. I think 1960 was the last full year that we put on the site at that time before we really kind of started rolling forward to the future. But what we did was, the plan at the time was, well, let's do let's say it's 1960, and the class of 1960 is. And, you know, it was basically the way to make sure that people like, I don't know, Al Massey and Nick Carter, guys like that, actually had a shot at getting in the Hall of Fame, as opposed to the main demographic on the Internet at the time, which would have probably had Tommy Rich in you know, a Buddy Colt and guys from the 70s and 80s, and would have totally blown past people that came before them. So it was kind of more for a fairness thing. We were looking back in time and going through history in the earlier years. It kind of morphed into this year. We really kind of just expanded the committee to include not just historians and writers and the staff at GWH, but also living members of the Hall of Fame. Everybody that we could find and track down, we did so, and asked them for their input on the ballots. The ballots are actually created by myself and a couple of other people, historians related with the site, and we decide who we believe should be on the ballot, and then we go out to the selection committee, put it out there, and let them go. What we did this year was a little bit different than we have in the past. It was a little more detailed, and also it's kind of like the BCS, I guess, in a way. In that, you know, we look at what's working, what's not working, what we feel to be fair or not fair about the process, maybe flaws in the system, how we can correct it next year. And we really felt like coming in this year it was going to be kind of a test, because not only did we expand the committee to include members of the Hall of Fame having a say in it, but also we expanded to create the era of 1985 to 2001. What we've done before, and let me look at this while I'm talking about it, so I make sure I get these eras right. What we've done now is it's by category based on the era in which people had their primary body of work as it relates to their time in Georgia. For example, Art Nelson fell in the 1944 to 57 category. Doug Gilbert fell in the 1958 to 72 era. Buzz Sawyer falls into 1973 to 84, stuff like that. So essentially it was to make sure that people from different eras each had a fair shot at getting in this thing, but maybe open it up a little wider. We also have tag teams broken out separately now, so maybe it's a little easier for a tag team to not be slighted. We've got the miscellaneous category, which is pretty much like guys behind the scenes or promoters or bookers or managers, TV announcers, stuff like that. And really, it was going to be kind of a shot in the dark when we did the 85 to 01 era, because – well, you know, I'm kind of rambling here. What I need to do is, I've answered the question, so now let me let you guys ask more questions.
Could you repeat that? I didn't quite get that.
Jerry got voted in on the historical thing from the 1800s to the 20s, wasn't he?
Yeah, he fell into the 1880s to 1943.
Wrestlers that were on the arc.
Yeah. Well, you know, there were two of every one, Ted and Jerry.
You see what I put up with every week.
So let me explain the categories too. The way that that breaks down, it's the 1880s, and because that's the farthest back we go with our research, it's the farthest back we found that there was actually organized wrestling, in some sense organized, probably loosely at best at that time. But going all the way up to 1943, which is right before Paul Jones came in, and then essentially 44 to 57 would be the Paul Jones era. Before Gunkel kind of took over running things when he first came in here, 58 to 72. 73 to 84 was more or less kind of the GCW era. And then 85 to 01, that, I guess I can go ahead and kind of finish what I was kind of going with there before I got off on a tangent, was 85 to 01 was kind of a shot in the dark, because I was looking at it and I'm like, okay, well, here's the thing. It's Georgia-based promotions. Well, during that time period, Vince had already come in and done his thing here, and the only thing you really had going on was the tail end of Championship Wrestling from Georgia before Jim Crockett Promotions came in and took that. And then what you had then was basically stuff like Jody's Promotion, Deep South. You had Blackwell's Promotion. I'm sure I'll leave out a million of them. Ben Masters, this, that, and the other. You know, Jerry running shows, doing his thing. But then you also had, technically, you had WCW was an Atlanta-based or a Georgia-based promotion. So we basically had to look at it that way. If we didn't, then we would have had to take out all the Savannah work from Jim Crockett from 76 on. We would have also had to take out, really, if you look at it on the technicality of that, we would have had to take out GCW from 1979 to 84. We couldn't have included that. So it was, to be fair, we had to have everything. So really, 1985 to 2001 is kind of a hodgepodge between, you know, guys that maybe worked, let's say, for Ben Masters in the 90s, but also worked for WCW. Well, now my first concern there was, you're going to have a lot of people voting here that may not know some of these people that worked, you know, primarily just the Georgia promotions, and aren't really going to be able to recognize those names or maybe their value to what was going on here. So we may end up ultimately having to split those apart. And I put that out in the letter when I sent it out to everybody, saying that, you know, if we're going to look at this, and, you know, we can tweak it going forward. But I got to tell you, the fact that Ted Allen made it, and he was primarily a Georgia guy, he comes in right behind Ric Flair. I don't see where there's going to be any tweaking, at least for this year, because it worked.
I don't think so either. I think it's a good thing. Are you looking at it as we go ongoing, expanding all the way up until WCW went out of business?
Well, technically that was 2001. So we have gone through.
That's
that
right. Era. I guess it was. It has been that long, hasn't it?
Yeah. So you know, down the road, probably, you know, I don't know. There's not a day goes by I don't think about blowing up the site, but and walking away. But you know, let's assume 10 years from now we're celebrating the 19th anniversary. I'm sure by then we'll have 2002 to 2010 or something like that. You know.
Right. Well, why don't we kind of go through the names? You got. I kind of listened to your show last night, so I know you got it broken down as to who got votes and who actually made it in and who came close and all that, if you don't mind going through that.
Yeah, we can do that again.
Okay.
Just looking at, let's see, the 1883 to 1943 era, really, let's see, on the ballot, counting them real quick, there's seven names on there. Nobody made it in from that era. However, Milo Steinborn led in the votes. And Joe Stecker right behind him. So those guys kind of running neck and neck, but neither one of them pulling enough. You know, obviously if Milo had pulled in a few more votes, I think he probably makes it in. But, you know, that's we'll see how that plays out next year. Well, let me go back to one other thing about the process I wanted to get out there. In order to be inducted, somebody's got to have 75% of the ballots. You got to be mentioned on 75% of the ballots. If I'm remembering right, I don't have those rules in front of me. What was it? Everybody got to pick three people in each era, I believe it was.
Right.
I believe that's how we did it. And then, essentially, there is a rule that anybody that's on the ballots that goes unselected on 100% of the ballots for three consecutive years gets removed, because obviously there's just not enough interest or not enough belief in that person that they're, you know, I mean, it's really just kind of, why have this person on the ballot? So what we would do in that instance is we would add another name. We would go and look and say, okay, well, this person missed it, but here's this person. In addition, anybody that receives no selections on 50% of the ballots for five consecutive years is also removed. Now, due to the expansion of the committee this year, what we did was we decided the clock started over for anybody that kind of fell into that scenario before. So that's really the end of the explanation of the process. Now, I've already gone over Stein, Born, and Stecker from the first era. 44 to 57, nobody made it in from that era either. This time around, Art Nelson just missed it by a hair. Really just missed it by a hair. Had a great run here back in the 50s. Chief Big Heart came in behind him, I would say breathing down his neck. So those guys came in pretty close there. And I'll bring this up, too, because she's in that era, Mildred Burke. There were three women on the ballot overall, each one in different eras. Mildred Burke actually led all the women, but she came in, I'm going to say, fourth in that era. So women not faring real well. And I kind of mentioned it last night. There may be a time where we'd say, okay, now let's maybe look at the women that have worked in Georgia and maybe put them in their own category and see how that goes. You know, and I say that, and at the same time, I also have to remember, too, that one of the things, and I keep saying it's really, you know, there's me and a few others that make these decisions. But bottom line is, I don't know that we want to start making sure we create a million different categories so that a million right. different people get in, because at some point you lose the specialness of it, you know. I just created a word there, specialness. I do that from time to time.
Well, I learn some every week on here. I promise you that.
Oh, I've heard some. Usually when Charlie's on.
Yeah.
So, but let's see. Moving up to the next era. Let's see. That's the era of 58 to 72. That's the one Doug Gilbert got in from. And just to be clear to anybody out there listening, that's not the Doug Gilbert that people remember maybe from the 80s, 90s. That's the professional. Doug Lindsay. He made it in, and coming in right behind him, really tied in this era, was Buddy Fuller and Joe Scarpa. It was kind of a distant second, but you can tell with Gilbert now removed from that category, having won, one of those guys probably is going to make it in next year. It's either going to be Buddy or Joe Scarpa, I would imagine. Eddie Graham pulled in a distant, we'll call it fourth, since those guys are tied for second. And let's see, anybody else that was close? Well, right behind Eddie Graham was Nick Bockwinkel. So that's that era. And then we get to the era I grew up in, and actually I was kind of amazed by this. We were going through it last night on Ringside Rap, and just the fact, well, let's go over who won first. Stan Hansen obviously makes it in from this era. Right behind him, literally, just by a nose, was Jack Briscoe. I would assume that probably opens up the door for Jack next year with Hansen's votes going elsewhere. Dick Slater comes in third in that category, but he didn't make it in either. But here's the thing. Just listen to the names from the era I grew up in to realize who's not in the Hall of Fame. Austin Idol, Buzz Sawyer, Dick Slater, Ernie Ladd, Harley Race, Jack Briscoe, Jake Roberts, Joyce Grable, Kevin Sullivan, the Mongolian Stomper, Ox Baker, Paul Orndorff, Robert Fuller, Roberto Soto, Ron Garvin, Ted DiBiase, The Spoiler, and Wahoo McDaniel.
And all of them could be in.
Yeah.
Really.
The thing. I mean, what a hard category. You know, what a hard era for people to look at. And I'm sure some people that maybe grew up with the era of just before that, which I'm sure some of that demographics listen to the show as well. You know, people like Bob Orton not getting in, Buddy Fuller still not in, Chris Janello not in, Eddie Graham, Gene Kaniski, Joe Scarpa, Johnny Valentine, Louis Tillet, the Mighty Yankee, Roger McKay, Bockwinkel, Paul DeMarco, Skandor Akbar, Tarzan Tyler. You know, it's just a great list of talent that, that still is not even in. That would be well deserved if they were. Now
any of these, and this may be something you may not be able to answer, but are any of these in danger of dropping off? I'm assuming with that list of names, those have gotten some votes.
Yeah, there were plenty that did not get any votes at all. Let's see. Well, in that era, not pulling in any votes at all, not pulling in a single ballot was Jake Roberts and the Mongolian Stomper. Those are the only two that didn't get at least a ballot.
I'm surprised about Jake. I can see Stomper not getting it because he had a very short run in, what, 81, 82, something like that.
Well, he had a really nice run in, I believe it was 76.
That's right. Well, there you go. Right. That's right.
Yeah, and then back again doing the 1981 thing, maybe early 82 even. But, kind of a limited run. Jake, primarily I think Jake is remembered really for the 83-84 run with Ron Garvin, working that long program with him over the TV.
Right.
Right. He also carried the book here for a little bit when Ole was trying to fend off stuff there at the end. But, I was really shocked to see him not get on a single ballot.
Well, I would imagine that now that you've got Hanson off there and the others, that those will garner enough to at least hang on. They may not get in, but they're garner enough to hang on and won't be eliminated totally next year.
Right. You know, and one other thing I wanted to make sure we pointed out here, too, we've had a lot of I've been on the Observer Hall of Fame committee now for several years, had a vote in that, and also was honored, totally flattered to be able to be a part of the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame committee for Amsterdam, New York, last couple go rounds, and being a part of that, that helps us start to tweak our process a little bit too, and seeing okay, well, how are these guys doing things, and what's working, what's not working, so. Guys like Dave Meltzer, J.J. Dillon, they've been a huge help in explaining that process and how those work. And we take things like that and throw those in. So it is a lot more than some of the people that complain about this process every year. Hey, it's some guy in his basement, this, that, and the other. And, you guys can attest to this. It's not just me and my decisions. It's there's a ton of people that are a part of this. Actually, 61 people. Invited to participate this year, eligible voters. So several dozen people do have some say here. The 85-01 period, Ric Flair gets in, and, of course, Ted Allen comes in. And, I said earlier, it was really kind of a crapshoot, wondering if this era was going to work or were we going to have to split it kind of apart and look at one being more the national type era with the Jim Crockett Promotions and WCW, and then Georgia having its own kind of thing. Obviously, it did work this year, so we won't tweak it next year. But I can tell you that coming in right behind those guys was Sting, and then Hulk Hogan. So there's two WCW guys. I would say, let me look through this list real quick here and see. I don't have this in any kind of order except alphabetical, and that kind of screws things up. The next person that was not a WCW person, votes-wise, I'm seeing Joel Deaton and David Young. So there's those two guys, deservedly so, pulling in quite a number of votes. But not high enough to maybe topple Sting and Hulk Hogan next year. But quite possibly, once those guys are in and off the ballot, that opens up, paves the way for more people. Because, if people that were going to vote for Ric Flair this year are going to vote for somebody else next year, obviously it makes sense for somebody. In the miscellaneous category, any of you guys got anything to say? I feel like it's my show all of a sudden.
No, you keep going. It's interesting.
Okay. The miscellaneous category, of course, as I mentioned earlier, it's more for managers, TV guys, TV announcers, behind-the-scenes people, executives. Like, for example, Ted Turner came out of this category. going in was Ron West, and I'm really glad to see Ron go in. I hated it that, you know, every year he just kind of missed it, and he was always just kind of missing it by hair. Right behind him that did not get in is Jim Cornette, and right behind him, basically, I mean, these guys are all, like, sitting on each other's shoulders piggyback, is Les Thatcher. So obviously maybe some room for Cornette or Thatcher to get in next year. Coming in really close behind them as well was Ben Masters. Real pleased to see that. And J.J. Dillon. So a lot of Georgia love there. And, you know, a little mix of the, I guess, the we'll call it the Jim Crockett era, because that was mostly Cornette in, I guess, the mid to late 80s. Tag teams. I don't know. Some guys named the Oates got in. I don't know who those guys are.
I don't know how they slipped in, but
and the Road Warriors, which that was bound to happen at some point. Those guys, obviously, a Georgia creation, and you know, massive success worldwide at their level. Now, just barely missing it. And here's a team that I absolutely just, you know, I want to see get in there is the Von Brauners, and a distant right behind them, Gunkel and Fuller. So those guys still nearly missing it as a tag team. Now, it's interesting that Buddy Fuller's still not in, either as an individual or in a tag team. Gunkel, of course, got in on the individual level. And if anybody was listening last night, I want to kind of clarify something that was said last night. Mike Sempervivi had asked me about Gunkel being in. Was he in as a singles? Well, and I answered yes, but really, you know, looking at Ole Anderson or Ray Gunkel, those guys were so important in so many facets of what they did that when they're on the ballot, you're not necessarily just voting for them for, you know, what they did in one facet of the thing. And okay, we're gonna put in Ole as a wrestler, and then, you know, later on down the road, we're going to put Ole in as a booker, and later on, we'll put him in as an executive. That's kind of ridiculous. I mean, you just got to kind of look at the whole body of work and put them in on that. And a tag team is really the only way somebody can go in as a multiple time. So I can't remember how many people are that way right now, but Ole is in as part of the Andersons and as an individual. Another team that I'm really surprised hasn't really kind of sniffed it a lot closer is the Armstrongs. But they did kind of come in pretty close to the top this time around. So maybe a little more Georgia love for them this time around kind of helped them out. And one other thing we've done, too, is we've created a place for everybody to create a write-in. Anybody that's maybe not currently listed in the Hall of Fame and is not currently listed on the ballot. Not sure yet what we're going to do in terms of, say, somebody once they're pulled off the ballot per the rules I said earlier. If somebody goes and writes them in after that, I'm not sure how that process is going to work. We're actually working on putting together an oversight committee to where we can look at things like that and look at processes as a whole to make sure that if there's any glaring omissions or inclusions that just are not right, we can kind of fix those as we go. And, you know, the NFL's got something like that. Major League Baseball has something like that. So I kind of want to understand a little more what they're doing. And then we're going to put that committee together just to make sure we keep this thing, keep as much integrity in this thing as it was intended to have when I first started it 9 years ago.
Well, I'm sure a lot of work's gone into it, Rich, to do this. There's no doubt.
You had mentioned that the people who are in there double. I'm looking at the list now. It looks like, let's see, the Assassins went in 2002 as a team, and Jody is in individually in last year's. I was thinking Tom was somewhere here, too.
Yeah, I believe he is.
And Sputnik Monroe went in as a single, and then the Monroes, all the Monroes went in as a group. So that's all that you got doubled at this point.
Yeah.
Of course, with the write-ins, so I'm sure Charlie Smith will be writing his name every year.
I got to tell you, I love Charlie. It took about six different tries to get his ballot straight. Him and computers don't get along real well. You know, you talk about Sputnik Monroe. We put up on our classic clip of the day today as a tribute to him, obviously, today being 5 years ago today, Sputnik Monroe passing away.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of the Hall of Fame, we're about to be joined by a third one here. Let me get him on the line.
Well, that referee you had on that classic clip yesterday, that was a good-looking fella.
Oh, wasn't he?
Yes,
what
he was.
To that guy?
That's back when I had a waist.
We've been joined by brand new Georgia Wrestling History Hall of Fame member Ron West. What's up, Ronnie?
Hey, good afternoon or good evening to you all. And first off, I'd like to say what a pleasure it is to be with some of the greats of Georgia wrestling. Nobody could ever top some of the guys in that area. And like Bobby Simmons always said, the only few of us that are really friends.
Got that right, brother.
And it's a pleasure to be there. And with the Oaks brothers, yourself, Bobby Simmons, Charlie Smith, what a crew of guys that I've seen came through there within the 13 years I was there. And it was a very good pleasure. It was a very tight-knit family. And the idea is we gave the fans what they came to see, and that was called pro wrestling.
Amen to that,
Ron. Amen.
And, you know, today, sure, the entertainment value is there, but when you leave, what have you seen?
There you go.
You know, ideal is I can see people flop and flip and flop over there, and you ask, what was that? Nobody, you ask the guy to your right, he don't know. Ask the guy to the left, he don't know. The guy in front, you don't have a clue, and the guy in the back don't know what day it is.
And the ones in the ring doing it don't know either.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
You know, that's the whole thing. The West family, we try to run some shows, and the people came in, the wrestlers came in, was telling us what they was going to do. And as my son, Roddy, from I'm sorry, it's my money. Why don't you just stay at home and I'll go to the on a cruise, because what you're going to do, I'm not going to get nothing returned for my money. Because you know, the idea is, I think some of these guys should be very thankful that some promoters gives them the opportunity to do that. But then when they get the opportunity, they, you know, they don't become themselves. They have no personality of themselves. They want to be somebody else.
Absolutely correct, Ronnie.
On TV.
That's it. You know, the whole thing is that, but, you know, going back, there's some great wrestling fans out there. You know, I don't want to say anything negative to the fans that IDO has supported us for years, and people still support the wrestling business, but, you know, 90% of the people you ask, do you watch it, they say no, and I'm one of that 90% that says no.
Yep.
So, you know, we're too busy with the doing the real circus. You know, we go back, and you know, we may want to talk about some guys that came up in the wrestling business. We talked about Ted Allen, which was a very nice guy, a good friend. He came up the hard way. He tried for years to get in. For some reason, Ole just didn't like him at all. And then finally, I just kept going to Ole and said, "Hey, we need to." We need to use him. He's a good guy. And Ole said, "Well, it's left up to you." He's at one time I was booking probably the underneath cards in all the towns. So then after that, Ole finally
Let me interrupt there. The truth be known, Ronnie West was booking this territory. for
he
several
just
years.
Want to admit it.
Well, this is the absolute truth. Ole, there was me and Ronnie in the office. Freddie Miller had come in on Monday and sometimes on Friday to help with the TV. Jim would come in Monday and sometimes Friday. And Ole would call on the phone on Friday afternoon to give Ronnie the TV. The rest of the time, Ronnie sitting there in that desk. And Ronnie was the one going to the towns. And I mean, that's just the truth.
Well,
yeah, it's you know, lots of people. I dedicated my life to that company, and the idea is I wanted to see it work. And the idea is lots of people don't understand how it worked. They were Charlotte's getting out and getting the small venues and stuff that kept lots of us job.
Yep.
And people did not realize that, and they didn't realize what things. Bobby, several days that we sat there, and before I left to go to the shows, we talked over what we thought should be done, and I appreciate your great input, Bobby.
Oh, I was just there, Bubba. I was toting the bag. You know,
yep.
Something, too, and we've said this a lot on here, And it's just the truth, and it's something I'm proud of, and the people that were in our era can be proud of. We ran the same towns week after week after week after week, and we drew week after week after week after week because Ronnie hit it dead on the nail right on the head. We gave them what they wanted, but we also whetted their appetite so they wanted to come back next week and see what was going to happen.
They wanted to see some more, that's it.
Yes, yeah, that we never, you know, and that was just... I mean, they can talk all they want to about selling out Madison Square Garden once a month, but we were selling out Augusta 40 weeks out of 52, you know.
Yes.
So these guys today couldn't run a town on a weekly basis.
No, they wouldn't know how, really. No. I mean, really.
No, you know the whole thing is you got to look at the mix of people. You know, ideally, I use the set. Lots of times, instead of watching the matches, I watched the people. What the people was buying, ideally, is I put that in a way that it could be used to the future and to make the venue lots better. And ideally, is let those, like you said, let those people going home. I got to see more. And then I think today in the wrestling business, what they did, they took the magic out of the wrestling business. There's no magic there no more.
No.
And ideally, that's one thing we still have in the circus business. We still have that magic. And then we're very thankful here in the circus that we are doing fairly good business. And today, I would like to go back, and today, the clown and myself here in Pompano Beach, Florida, we went and visited a special needs, children's needs home, and I'd like to say to everybody, you know, these people are very blessed what they do to these children. I saw some things today that I just could not believe, and my heart goes out to those people.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of people, I know Ronnie got voted in as a referee, and as he's mentioned here, there's a lot of things. I don't think there's anything in the wrestling business that Ron hasn't done. He's booked, he's promoted, he's even wrestled a time or two.
Michael, we don't want to really get into that wrestling because the first thing I was too little in seat the pants. And I tell you what, that was the best jobber ever was around.
Well, you mentioned
because I wrestled in Blue Ridge, Georgia. I wrestled Judy Grable. Judy Grable. This is a event. Now, if people knows Nick Gulas. Now, Nick Gulas probably had. If he made a half a set, he had a half a set because he sure didn't pay nobody. And, and, And now what he would done, we was up there and coming around the mountain, going up to, that's kind of like a song, coming around the mountain. But anyway, it's up in Georgia, but you had to come through the Tennessee mountains to get there. They had a landslide. All the wrestlers was in that caught, couldn't move. So the police department from Blue Ridge, Georgia, and to the Tennessee was talking back and forth to each other. And all these guys were stuck there. So I go, back then, no cell phones. So I go call Nick Goulas. He says, "Hey, boy, what kind of house we got?" And I said, at the time, we had about a $2,200 house. And now that was great back in those days. And he said, "Don't give a dime back. Don't do something." So I went out and wrestled the girl for 45 minutes. All the people came in. That crazy Luke Graham was on the card. Charlie Lay, I don't know if people would remember Charlie Lay from the office in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
But he was good, but he was actually from Tennessee, and he was back home visit. So as soon as they came in, the girl asked me, she picked me up, slammed me, dropped an elbow on me, and beat me. This is the kicker. This is the kicker. Not only I took the ring up there. I checked up the card, and also that I did all those things and made all $50.
I just want to know one thing, Ronnie. Who called that match between you and Judy Grable?
She did.
Uh-huh. That's not what I heard. I heard you called it. You kept calling for a body scissors.
Well, the idea is we kept going for the head scissors. I would take her over in the headlock, and I would say, "Head scissors." She kind of figured out after a while what I was doing. But you know, I was from the old school. You go and you if you work the head, come up, grab the headlock, take them over, and go into the head scissors and every while. But that was my favorite part. I did for 2 days.
Well, Ronnie, I got to ask you one question. When you was doing the booking here, was you all also doing the payoffs?
No, I wouldn't.
I knew you wouldn't admit to that.
No, I do is.
Maybe Bobby
only,
was.
Only, I think we blame Bobby on that.
Well, I'll tell you this now. When I worked for Jim taught me his, and I'll tell you how Barnett paid. Barnett paid 33% of the net. He took the gross house, and he deducted the sales tax, and whatever that dollar figure was, he paid the talent 33%. Now, if that was a $100,000 house in the Omni, he paid him $33,000. If it was a $1,600 house in Athens, Georgia, he went in the hole because the guarantee was $65. But he taught me how to do it. I used to figure them for him, but he had final approval. I can't be blamed for him.
Right. You know, at one time in Georgia, we always making a very good living. And I go back and look at the talent we had, you know, and saying this not just to the Oaks brothers was probably one of the best tag teams that you've ever seen in the state of Georgia.
I appreciate that.
They went out there and ideas what they did. They gave that person that paid that dollar to come in that door. They gave them 99% of that. For them, their entertainment and idea is, and I think not only the Oaks brothers had great talent, but they had the mind of the business, knowing that you had to give to get back.
I appreciate those kind words, Ron.
It comes great, and again, if people, lots of guys don't realize how much back then. How people work together, and you'll probably remember this. We was at a Macon TV show. I was late getting from the office to Macon. We did that, you know, people on Saturday, on Thursday afternoon.
Thursday afternoon, yeah.
And back then I was dipping a little cold, but I'd never dipped Copenhagen until the Oaks brothers introduced me to Copenhagen. I went from one dressing room, got a dip of Copenhagen from either Jerry or Ted. I went to the other side and forgot everything I was thinking about. I forgot the whole strip. I had to lay down, and it was, you'll probably remember this. It was, we dressed in the break room.
Right.
I had to lay down in the floor because the floor it was spinning so bad. So every time somebody, here, take a dip of this. No. And I think it was either you or your brother one time patting me on the back, and it was also in Macon, too, and I swallowed a chew of Red Man. And I was hollering Ralph for 30 minutes, and people were saying, bell time. And I can't go. So, but you know, you wouldn't, you know, those times we pulled real some stuff on people. And nobody got mad at each other. We just had a great time, and we tried to protect each other. And today, you say anything about protecting anybody, they have no clue what you're talking about.
No, not none.
And you know, one thing I liked about Tom Renesco, he was always saying, if you compliment each other. Tom was always, I thought, was a brilliant book or two. Which we have now with the circus. Tom Jr. is working with us here at the circus. But I can't say he's that smart.
Hey, Ronnie.
Yes.
I still want to be shot out of that cannon. Can you arrange
okay.
that?
We do it. Dad, do you want to be shot in the net, the airbag, or just solid wall?
Just something that'll catch me.
Either one of them would catch you. Now the net, I would recommend the net because it's more safer. The airbag, you can be overshot. The wall, when you hit it, you kind of just kind of like butter. You just kind of melt down it. So, but the we're like Michael has been a great. He's come aboard. Very good with the circus. Last night, him and myself went to a city council meeting where I tell you it was the best. I think it's going to be a Broadway play next year. It's going to be the animal rights versus the city council. They had the videos, and they had this lady could turn on the tears, turn it off, talk on the phone, turn it back on. They had the kids get up, and they would mumble, and then they would cry. Now, I don't think the Cha had one clue what the animals was even about. And idea is, a circus is not a circus without animals. And the people actually comes out and sees that. And like we said, we're finishing up... here in Florida, we'll be finishing up on November the 27th, and we'll be heading towards home. Some of us are going to go home sooner. But again, I just want to thank you for letting me have a peace of mind and say a little bit about the great business of pro wrestling. I'm talking about years ago. Today, I have no clue what it is. I think maybe the animal rat maybe be right in the show. So, you know, they could be, you know, ideas. We didn't have writers years ago. We had bookers.
Exactly.
So, and ideas that had to go with the territory. We had, you know, great people came through. But anyway, once again, what a pleasure it is to be inducted into the Hall of Fame in Georgia.
Well, I'm glad Ted and I went in with somebody like you. It makes it even more special.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And you guys, anyway, I'm not expensive. I'm very reasonable. If y'all would send me a little check for my vote, I'd appreciate it.
I knew that was coming. It's already in the mail, like Rich said.
Bob is in the mail.
No problem. I'll be looking for it.
Just go out. Maybe stand out there about 5 in the morning. I think mailman may run.
Make sure I don't miss him.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I want to thank everybody, and I know y'all got lots of more discussions you need to talk about here. And again, thank y'all guys so much for letting me be part of your area.
Thanks, Ronnie.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Thank you. Okay. Bye bye.
The wonderful Ronnie West.
He's a class act.
I learned an awful lot from that guy.
Well, I have too. He's fun to be around. Rich, you still with us?
Oh, yeah. I'm just trying not to get in the way.
I thought about you the other night. I heard the Muppets were going to be on Vince's show, so I turned it on. And I think as soon as I turned it on, there was Animal. And for those of you that don't know Rich Tate that well, that's Rich Tate's hero, Animal from the Muppets. Both of them were drummers, or are drummers, I should say.
Well, I'd like to thank Rich for all the work he's done for GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. I know it's a lot of work. I know you get aggravated, but, I mean, for guys like us that love what we did, you still keep it alive for us, Rich, and I really want to thank you for that.
Okay, we now started that awkward, uncomfortable blushing thing. All right. Seriously, it's like I've always told Bobby, the goal early on from this, and I actually met Bobby online before we even got started. A lot of the early stuff was kind of information was kind of fished from Bobby's brain, and of course that was pretty scary. But without Bobby and the late Ken Timms, there would be no GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com probably. And those guys really kind of helped help get the ball rolling and put me in touch with some people that could help us out. And as frustrating as it sometimes gets, it is for you guys and essentially, that's what it's all about. It's just documenting it, trying to make sure the younger generation realizes how good it once was. And sometimes I do disagree. I do think there are some bright shimmers of hope in the business today. Places like Ring of Honor, I think, put on a damn good show. Sometimes on WWE, if you filter through long enough, you might find a good match here and there. And TNA, well, that's just another world. But they were the glory days for me, and just like they were for you guys. And again, it's all done for you guys, and to make sure that you guys have your place in history. And long after you're gone, it'll still be out there for people to fish off the internet at some point.
Well, I really appreciate it, and I know everybody else does too, Rich.
Yeah, me too. The guys today, and the business is what it's evolved into. Our business has changed over the years. If you go back through history, I mean, it's constantly evolved from one thing into another, and it is what it is today. And it's never going back to what we knew. And I don't know. I think I'd feel a little bit better about it if at least the guys today had some appreciation for what we did, because most of them don't. I find that out more often than not when I'm, at the reunion in Mobile and the younger guys come in. It's just it is what it is, and I hope they all make a lot of money. But seeing the crazy stuff they do, I hope they're saving their money.
Well, kind of bridging the gap, though, and going off what you're saying there, and all, with all due respect, I don't know that you can blame the guys that are working today, for maybe not realizing where it all came from, because let's face it, there was a generation in between you guys and them that that basically the entire business changed itself. The structure of the business changed. So those guys don't even have anything to fall back on to even realize where it came from in a lot of
places. Well, that's true too.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are a handful of guys. I mean, guys like Daniel Bryan that realize where it came from, and Nigel McGuinness that truly appreciate guys like yourselves. But going back even before you guys, even before your era, I've seen interviews where Lou Thesz complained about the business in the 1970s and talking about how it had become a joke in the 70s. So, what are you going to do? I think the longer I watch this and the longer I've watched the business and how it's evolved and the more people I talk to from each era, the more I've slowly come to realize that just like with anything, not just wrestling, one thing, when I look at myself, I prefer wrestling from that era. I prefer television from that era. I prefer music from that era. Everything about when I was a teenager and evolving, as a person, for some reason that nostalgia, that's what sticks with me. And I think, a lot of people are that way. So really the kind of thing that they grew up on and what they latched on to, maybe in their more evolutionary years, I think that's what you end up, kind of looking back on as you get older. And the problem is, it is going to change. But hell, everything changes. As sad as it is to see what you once loved change so much, I think that's maybe the shock is how it has changed from more a foundation of, hey, it's a wrestling show where occasionally there's going to be some entertainment. It's now entertainment over wrestling. But, bottom line is, just like everything else changed, so did wrestling have to,
But you look at the comparisons that you're making, television, music, the wrestling business, what they all have in common, especially music and the wrestling business, it's all, pretty much controlled by one powerful force. Vince controls the wrestling business. The music business now is I don't even know what to call it. I mean, the radio stations, and I've noticed that since I've gotten into the working for the circus, because that's part of what I do. Is each town I go into, I reach out to the local radio station and media and stuff like that to let them know that we're coming and deal with that. But they're all owned by one or two conglomerates. The radio stations, it's very rare that there are local morning radio stations anymore. It's all syndication for, John Boy and Billy or Lex and Terry, and that's pretty much it. Howard Stern, and that's it.
Right.
There are no more local, shows anymore. It's the same way with television. Atlanta was one of the few towns that I've gone into, the other being New Orleans, that still had local morning television, a television show in the morning. Everything else is all network. If you look at television, with all the different cable company or cable channels that we have, they're owned by what, five or six conglomerates.
Yep, that's
sure. Disney owns 100 channels. This one owns 100 channels, and everything is so geared on television towards reality shows because it's so cheap to make. And human nature, people just love to watch these train wrecks of the worse they are. The weirder these people are, the more we want to watch them. Like I said, it makes us feel better about how weird we are. We don't feel as weird. But, it's not like it used to be as far as, I sound like an old man here, I guess because I am, but, it's not like the Andy Griffith Show or something simple, just telling a simple story now. And having a variety of things that you can watch, everything now on television is reality based, or the majority of it is, I should say. There's still some shows out there that aren't, but it's reality based. Music business is all geared towards American Idol and this prepackaged auto tune junk that. I mean, down here in South Florida, I drove from here down to Fort Lauderdale last night to meet Ronnie, and I couldn't find a radio station to play rock music. I went through the whole spectrum from when the dial deal, and I couldn't find a radio station played rock music. It's just weird. But anyway, I'm off my soapbox. Somebody else step up.
Rich, I know you got something else to say.
Oh, you know, hey, video killed the radio star, and technology's killing the world. I mean, that's bottom line. But you know, I don't want to go off the deep end. But you know, let's face it, wrestling was going to have to change because cable television was bringing the world closer together. And hell, look at it now, Facebook and Twitter. You know, you got the 24/7 news, and you know everything the instant it happens. You know, unfortunately, I think, you know, kind of what Mike explained, a lot of that is the result of technology and all those great things that we've, you know, generations that came before me have kept reaching to the stars. Well, hell, we're in the stars now.
We are.
We're on planet Earth, but we're in the stars in a lot of ways and the things that we deal with on a daily basis.
I mean, you can sit in your living room.
I still don't have a flying car. Hey, Jay, would you imagine what Darwin would be like if he had a flying car?
Oh, my gosh. You know, you can sit in your living room now and watch a war going on.
Yep.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just, you can't believe it.
It changed a lot. Some for the better, some not.
I guess you have to change with the times.
So, all right, well, let's get this thing back to wrestling, guys. Come on, that's fun. So, you know, here's what I want to know, Jerry. What was it like to wrestle Joe Stacker?
He was still.
You know, the guy last train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about Milo Steinborn?
Well, I trained in his gym. That's about as close as I got to getting in the ring with him.
As good a shape as he stayed in, you probably didn't want to get in the ring with him.
No, I didn't. He was in fantastic shape when I was down there.
I know he also, you know, I don't know why I've never thought to ask Dick this as many times as he's been on with us, but he was also, he did strongman stunts too. Did he work with the circus at all?
No, he at one time he was the strongest man in the world. That's how he got started. He was the first man in the world that would squat with 500 pounds. That was way back when he first got here. You know, he didn't know the technique like they had. You know, he was just strong. And he was...
Now, are you talking about Dick or Milo?
Milo.
Okay.
His daddy was something else. I really respected his dad. He was a unique person.
How many years did he wrestle? I know he promoted many years down in Orlando.
I don't know how many years he wrestled. I really don't.
You've ever seen early pictures of him? He looks just that Dick. You could never deny that man was his father.
No, they looked just alike. They really did. He was a good man. He was kind to me.
You know, Dick told me a funny story one time. There's this picture of his dad standing in the corner of the ring at the city auditorium. And he's standing in the corner, and there's this great, great shot of the crowd behind him. Ringside seats, and I can't remember who it is. I'd have to look at the photo and try to remember which one Dick was talking about. But apparently, there's a man, and he was with a lady that was not his wife, and that was printed, I guess, in the newspaper or something, and it caused all kind of problems for that guy. Y'all need to ask him about that at some point.
Can't remember
who the guy was.
Actually, I think what it was the picture with the guy with the lady is actually was taken with Dick, but he was doing it in the same ring, in the same arena that his father had taken a picture in many years earlier, and Dick was wanting to publish them, you know, and get them published in the newspaper side by side, And when he showed it to the guy said, "You can't use that one because that one is not my wife."
Oh, there you go. There you go. That's it. Yeah.
I'm ashamed to say this, but I used to have to worry about this sometimes when I went to the Braves game. I never wanted to be on TV.
Oh, God.
I remember Skip Carey used to say there's a lot of people out there, a lot of men out there with their daughters.
Nice to see all the guys bringing their daughters to the game.
Yeah.
Daughter, it's Daddy Daughter Day at the stadium.
Yeah.
I think the best thing.
Before your time, but were you ever around Paul Anderson? We're talking about strong man.
I only met Paul Anderson.
How far do y'all think I go back?
I don't know. Well, it's not that so much as I don't know how long he worked. I know he worked some in the 60s, but I don't know if he continued to do spot stuff since he was from Georgia.
I really don't know. I only met him a couple of times. Real nice man, but I never. No, he was done when I started.
There's a sound bite for the future. How far you guys think I go back?
Charlie Spence told the story about Paul Anderson. He was from Pittsburgh, Tennessee, and they said that Charlie said he got a speeding ticket in Pittsburgh, Tennessee, riding a bicycle. Don't know how that worked out, but Charlie swears that's the truth.
How long did he wrestle, Rich? Do you know?
Who's that? Who?
Paul Anderson.
Oh, man. He was, I wouldn't say more than a decade, if that, and that's probably even a reach. It seems like he was here 50, oh, let's see, 59, 60? No, 57, 58, because it was right around the time there was some title controversy with the NWA. It's a promotion splitting off from the NWA around the trials about the monopoly and whatnot. He hadn't been wrestling long before he came in here, from what I can recall, and I don't think he lasted very long after he was here. It couldn't have been more than maybe 8-10 years.
That sounds about right.
Still 8-10 years longer than I did. You know, I'm sorry. Jerry always cracks me up. There was one night we were on the phone, and Dan Masters, I can't remember which show I was on, and Dan was on there, and Jerry's on the phone. I think Dan had gone down to Savannah. It was before you, but you were heading down that way or something. And he says, "Yeah, when you get here, you ought to set up a ring." Jerry goes, "And do what?" He'd already been burned so bad on this business. Oh. He's like, "I ain't getting back in this crap again." And
nope.
Do what?
I mean, really?
Now you don't even need a ring as long as you've got a ramp, strobe lights, and music.
Some fog, yeah, you're good to go.
I will say this, man. That place you guys had set up down in Columbus, my God, what a facility for indie wrestling. That was.
It was. I was proud of it. It took me 2 years to do that.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome down there. I know Mike went down there because he went down there with me at one point. Bobby, did you ever go down there?
Never made it down there.
Man, it was the ultimate indie setup, based on all the places I've ever been to.
What made me feel proud when Armstrong got there and Dusty and Tully, they couldn't believe it. You know, when you come inside, it was, you know, I thought we did a good job on it until I got hooked up with those other people, and that was another story. But I thought we did it right.
Yeah, it was good stuff. It was a lot of fun.
But
drawing people week after week.
Yep. But the other guys that went in was like, you know, this year was Stan. He was a good guy. He He deserves to be in there. I went to Japan with him many times. He was big over there.
Yeah, talk a little bit about these guys. Doug Gilbert's professional. I've actually got his phone number, or at least one that I believe to be his. I want to be giving him a call soon and try to get him on the air on Ringside Rap with us. Maybe you guys might want to try to have him on.
Yeah, really, I'd love to talk to Doug.
Just talk about him for a little bit. What, you know, did you ever get to work with him in the ring?
Yes, I did. Yeah, when he was here with Curtis Smith, they were the Infernos.
Mm-hmm.
JC,
mm-hmm.
Worked with him a lot here. That's the only time I ever worked with Doug, was here in Georgia. I don't know if I was ever anywhere else with him or not. Of course, I know him and Dickie were up in Minneapolis together. And then he, of course, he started here as a professional, and I hadn't even started then. And
was the professional, was that a Leo creation? Or was that a Renesta? That was a. I know Tom came in during that run. Now I'm going back to when I was a fan. I know.
Rich
Tom,
may know.
Was that a Garibaldi creation?
You know, I've got something right in front of me. If you can bear with me a second, I'll actually.
That's
be able
a good
to
question,
that.
Bobby. That's a excellent question.
Yeah. His first run here actually was 59 and 60. He was in here with Johnny Gilbert, which of course that's where he ended up getting the Gilbert name from, but. He came in the summer of 68, and it was actually, he came in as a babyface masked guy, and I've got to wonder if it wasn't something maybe they were looking for a babyface masked wrestler, because this was literally a month or two after Tim Woods left.
And that was what year, Rich? 68?
68 is when he came in, yeah, summer of 68.
As a professional, right?
Yep.
Yeah, because
he was like a protege of the Assassins. He teamed with them, and then they did the turn, and then they kept bringing in different mascots. And they brought Aldo Bogni in as the Super.
Yeah, Bogni came in here. I mean, there again, you're going back to when I was a fan, but I mean, I was there every week. So, it was, yeah, Bogni came in as a mask guy. They worked a program with a professional, and Paul DeMarco did a program together. There were several. And I can remember the night that he finally took the mask off. He worked with Tom and Jody, and the deal was he said he'd beat both of them in an hour. And he beat Tom, and then him and Jody went through the hour. So everybody thought, well, screwed again. You know, he's gone the hour, and he, you know, but he stood there and he said, no, I said I'd beat both of them in an hour, and he stood in the middle of the ring, took his hood off. It was never taken off. He took it off himself.
Yeah, that was November 21st, 69. Actually, I was just looking at that.
You know, the amazing thing about him was he was as big as he was and as bulky as he was, all the high flying and high spots that he could do.
Oh, he could do anything. He was a pleasure to be in the ring with.
He was the first guy I ever remember seeing stand on the top rope, do a complete somersault backwards, land on his feet. And then catch a guy coming out of the corner with an arm drag or a backdrop or whatever. It was just for a guy that size, you know, Whipper Watson Jr. used to do all that stuff. But Whipper Watson Jr. weighed 180 pounds soaking wet. But to see Doug Gilbert at 245, 250 do that, it's pretty darn impressive.
It was. He was amazing. He really was.
The first time I ever saw him, he was, I guess, 13, 14 years old, I was in Tampa, and he was down there as Redbeard. He'd grown his hair out real long and grown a beard, and was down there with Bobby Shane and Mike Webster, I think, was a Canadian football player that was down there with them. That was the first time I ever saw it, and I was amazed by him. You know, he had this wild look about him when he was actually acting like, you know, Mad Dog Vachon or Pampero Flopo or somebody like that. He was actually wrestling. And it amazed me then to be as big as he was. Today, having grown up on the Gulf Coast wrestling and what little bit I remember of Columbus, Georgia wrestling when I was real young, Tampa was the only area that I had seen outside of the Mobile territory. And of course, in Mobile territory, the biggest guy we had working there was Rip Tyler, and he weighed 240 pounds. I mean, we just didn't have big guys that worked in that territory. And to go down there and see guys like Gilbert and Mike Webster had been close to 300, and these guys were phenomenal. But I was real impressed. Of course, back then I had no clue he was Doug Gilbert. I didn't realize to find that out until many years later, but he was very impressive.
And to get,
oh, go ahead.
To get to the Road Warriors, I was wrestling here and there, and that's when Jake was doing the booking here. And he called me. He said, "You wanna work a little more around here?" I said, "Yeah, yeah." He said, "Okay." He said, "2 weeks, you'll be in Columbus." I said, "Okay." So he teamed Garvin and I up with the against the Road Warriors. I've told this story on here before, and everybody in my gym was down there that night. They said, "Man, those guys are going to kill you." And so before we go out, Garvin said, "Have you seen these guys in person?" I said, "No." He said, "They kind of green, man." I said, "No." I said, "I hadn't seen them." So we go out. They're already in the ring. And I get in the ring with Garvin, and I look across at them. My God. It took all the stuff off them. He said, "They're green now." So we got out there. We boom, boom, boom. I back-talked him to the turnbuckle and I billed him, come running, gave him a head scissor, right? Took him over, boom, boom, boom. We won that match. I see him in Atlanta the following Saturday at TV. He said, "Hey, brother." I said, "Yeah, man." He said, "That was a good match the other night." I said, "Yeah." I said, "I enjoyed it." He said, "You know, that's the first time I've ever taken a head scissor." I said, "Well, I figured you could catch me." I'd have known that, I wouldn't have thrown it, believe me.
Yeah, if he had ducked, you'd have hit about three rows back.
Well, he caught me, though. Don't think he didn't. But, you know, they were green, but they weren't that bad. They weren't that bad. And then we wrestled them the next week, and we beat them for the titles. And, I mean, they were a pleasure, really. I never had any problem with them.
Now, Bobby, you weren't around when the Road Warriors actually became a team, but you I believe were still in the office in '82 when Joe first became the Road Warrior.
Yeah.
Before the team came about, that was just a brief little deal, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know the thing about those two guys, you know, and Jerry, I think Jerry will agree with me on this. When they became a problem to work with is when Ole told them they were invincible.
Yeah,
you know,
I never had a problem with them.
Yeah, they just, you know, they were told they were invincible, and you know, they don't sell, don't do, you know, just go out there and kill people. Well, that's all fine and well, I guess, but you know, I learned this very young in my career. If you go out there and kill somebody, who have you beat?
Well, I kind of agree with that, Bobby, because I know when Ronnie and I were working around with them, I mean, it was like ordinary tag team wrestling match, except these guys were who they were, and, you know, these big monster-looking guys, but they would, it was just like another tag match, except they were just huge guys. But when they did change, it was, I don't know, it wasn't the same or something.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, I didn't work with them any like that. You know.
Talk about Stan Hansen for a little bit, guys.
Huh?
Since you both were around Stan Hansen, talk about him for a little bit.
Stan?
Yep.
I met Stan for the first time in 1970 in Florida. I think we started right around the same time. And he was down there, and, you know, I was just starting, and he was starting. You know, we was on first, second match like that. And I didn't see Stan for years later. And, I know I worked with him out in Louisiana, worked with him here in Georgia. But, you know, poor Stan, his eyesight wasn't real good.
Yeah.
So he took those glasses. I love him to death, now, don't get me wrong. I think the world of Stan. And when he would kick you in the head, man, you would think he was punting football.
And he threw that lariat. Yeah, you know, that lariat looked believable, and the reason it was is because it was real believable. He was on that end of it because he couldn't see you.
He couldn't. And he was laying in there.
he told me one time, the time I worked with him, he said, look, he said, I'm just going to throw it. How hard it hits you is up to you.
That's the truth.
I mean, Stan was a big man, man. I'm telling you.
Yes, he was.
You know, yeah, the thing I like about him so much as a fan, from a fan's perspective, was even as a heel, you wanted to like him. He was one of those heels that you couldn't hate completely. There was
It was.
Yeah, he was one of those guys. You just wanted to love the guy. So when he turned face, man, it was like, okay, now he's on the right side. Now he's on the right side. You know, now give Ole the crap. Give it to Ole, you know. That's what you wanted to see.
He was so funny. He was, but man, what a star in Japan he became.
Oh,
I know. Yeah. I was in Japan with him, and he said, "I'm leaving tomorrow night." I said, "We haven't been here but a week." He said, "But I'm flying back to Minneapolis to a show there." And he says, "I'll be back the next day." I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Stan, how can you do that? I mean, you know, 12 hours back and 12 hours back again." I said, "Man, how can you do that?" He said, $5,000, that's how. They was running some big show in Minneapolis, and he was their champion. He wasn't going anytime he was back.
With the belt, wasn't he? Didn't he take off with the belt?
Yes. I don't know what went wrong there.
Yeah, I don't know that story. I just know kind of the headline.
You're right. You're right. I forgot about that. You are correct.
Hell, that might have been.
The whole deal was that he was working for Baba, and he hadn't been in the States in probably, you know, other than here and there for a couple 3 years, and Martel was the Vern's champion, and he wasn't drawing all that well, so I don't know if Vern struck the deal with Baba or what it was, but the agreement they came to was they want to put the belt on Stan, and the AWA schedule was so light he could still pretty much keep a full schedule in Japan. Well, I don't know if it came down to disagreement with I think from what I've heard, Vern wanted Hanson to screw Baba, and Hanson wasn't going to do it. And so they came up, he was wanting to drop the belt back to Bockwinkle in Denver, Colorado. And Hanson just skipped out, brought the belt back to Japan with him, because his loyalties were to Baba.
And he was smart.
He was still working with Baba, or working for Baba, but they were just doing this in conjunction with Ganya. And Ganya wanted him to turn around and screw Baba, and he like you said, he made the bulk of his career working for Baba and made a ton of money over there.
He made a wad. He went 16, at that time he went 16 weeks a year.
Yeah, that's about what Bill Eady was doing. You know, we talked a lot about him. I mean, it's a matter of you could literally go over there and in those 16 weeks a year, make as much as you could here in a year.
That is correct.
You know, you're basically going to putting that in the bank, and then the rest of the time here, you're just paying bills. How about Ric Flair? Did you guys, Jerry? I don't ever remember. I don't remember you working with Flair in any sense, but maybe you did. I'm sure you did. Maybe in the Carolinas, right?
No, Ted was already there. Ted did a deal with Ric before I got there, and he did a deal on TV. Ted and Ric, and then it was to lead up to the Mulligan deal, where Mulligan comes out there and rips one of his robes up and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the only time I ever wrestled Ric was in Dothan. That's the only time I ever wrestled him. And you know, Ric always treated the guys good. But I mean, then when I got to Charlotte, I mean, you know, they teamed Ted and I up, and we had a lot of great matches up there with Gene and Rene Goulet, and I mean, that was almost every night. But Ric was doing the thing with Mulligan, and then Steamboat. But yeah, I only wrestled Ric one time. That was in Dothan.
Who was that for? Cruz was there for Fuller?
He was a world champion. I don't know who he, I don't know who would it have been. It was the first. Let's see.
It had to be Fuller then.
It could have been
working. I would have thought you guys would have met in, say, at least in St. Louis somewhere along.
Not never wrestling there either.
Bobby, you were working in the office when Flair was coming through here early on in his prior to winning the title.
I met him a long time before he ever got the title. He would come through, and that's back when I was refereeing every night. you know, there again, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I never dreamed he would have gotten a world title, much less kept it as many times and as long as he did. But it's not what you know, it's who you know. And, you know, I just, I'm one of those people, I like Ric Flair, I got nothing against him, but it's all these people that talk about him being the greatest world champion and all this other stuff, I never saw it. And I just, I agree with what Ole said in his book. If you ever saw one match, you've seen all of them. And a lot of people don't like that, but that's the truth. That's the gospel truth. Getting back to that, I wanted to say one thing about Hansen. Funny thing about Stan and Ole when they were partners, and this is a behind-the-scenes thing that nobody knew. Stan and his wife and his son, who had just recently graduated from college here in the last few years, his son was real young. They were going to either First Baptist or Second Baptist Church of Riverdale. They were members there. And Stan was Stan's a family guy. He was a Baptist, and he was very staunch in his beliefs. And it was so funny because Ole and him were so polarized opposites from the way they talked, the way they acted, and the way they did. We'd be sitting in the dressing room, and Ole would get on one of his tirades where he just every other word was this, and I've seen Stan just get up and walk out of the room, and. It became a sort of a running gag. I mean, it was like good and evil. But you would never when Stan went in the ring when he was a heel, you would never know that that was his demeanor outside the ring. But that's the way it was. Very mild mannered guy. Just very, you know, just very soft spoken and just a great guy. Came to Mobile a few years ago. It was the first time I'd seen him in years and years and years. He's lost a lot of weight and he looks great. And he said he's happy as he can be. He lives in Texas somewhere. He won't tell people where he lives. He said, you know, I'm just happy out there and doing my little thing. But back to your question. Flair was a good guy. Never had any problem with him. He made an awful lot of money here in Georgia with that belt. And I think the majority of the things that he did, though, happened in the Carolinas.
Yep. I know Stan was in Japan, and Stan watched every dime he had, you know. He told me, he said, I thought I was cheap until I was around Randy Savage.
Did you ever know his dad, Angelo?
Yeah, I met him.
Angelo, son, listen, Ted Allen was tight. And I thought Ted was tight till I met Joe Scarpa. But Angelo Poffo make Joe Scarpa and Ted Allen look like last of the big spenders.
Really?
This is a gospel truth. When Debbie was going to school, she would go up and visit her friend up in Nashville. And her friend worked for the office selling programs up there. And worked with Scott Teal up there, and she got to be friends with Judy Poffo, Angelo's wife, and they would go out to eat, like to a Shoney's or something, and Angelo would make Judy order a child's plate off the child's menu, and his philosophy was, well, you're never going to eat that much anyway, so there's no need to pay for an adult portion when you're not going to eat it, and he would make her order off the child's menu. I mean, it was awful. So Randy came by it honest.
I've heard stories of Angelo going into a restaurant ordering hot water.
Oh, yeah.
had taken the ketchup that's already on the table and making himself tomato soup.
I don't doubt that at all.
Now, you know, obviously I want to ask Bobby about Ted and Jerry, just being around those guys over the years, obviously doing a radio show with Jerry and whatnot here, but thoughts on them. Obviously you're not going to tell me anything negative, but I don't think that there would be anything negative, actually.
Well, I used to have 20/20 vision, but I got cataracts in both eyes from so many times I got hit in the eye. But, you know, it was. Listen, I met Ted first. Ted came in working for Ann, and me and Ted lived. My first wife was from Columbus, Georgia, and her parents lived maybe 2-3 minutes from Ted. And used to ride with him a lot, and you know, we developed a friendship, and I admired Ted. Ted was a little older than me, but I admired his work ethic. I admired the fact that he could work like he could at such a young age, and you know, and I had seen Jerry work. I kid Jerry about toting his bag, but I watched Jerry work when I was a fan. When I got into business, I kept up, you know, and seen his things that they were doing. And when Ted left, he went to Kansas City, and when they came back as a team, and that's when I actually met Jerry. I guess that was probably 76. Was it 76?
Yep.
That's correct.
Golly, I thought it would have been sooner than that. But, yeah, 76, I mean, it was just a – and I hope Jerry feels the same way, but I developed the same rapport with him. And it was just, you know, as a referee – and that's the only perspective I can use here. I like being in the ring with guys I could trust. I was very careful about who I rode with. I mean, I made my mind up a long time ago. I wasn't going to jail because somebody was doing something stupid and I happened to be in the car with them. So I was real careful about who I rode with and who I hung out with. But being in the ring, it was the same thing. You know, you like working with guys you could trust. And, you know, these guys, you know, Ted and Jerry were smooth as glass. And you know, you never had to worry about, you know, them doing something stupid that was going to get you hurt. All you had to do was stay out of the way and just kind of let them do their thing. And it was always a pleasure. This is the truth. And I'd say this not because he's on the radio. I'd say it to anybody. I never heard anybody say one thing in the whole time I've been around this business. I never heard one complaint about anybody having to work with either one of those guys.
Well, I appreciate that.
That's an oddity because most people's got something to say about everybody.
The biggest compliment that I ever received, it came from you.
From Bob Geigel?
Yes. That was in...
You may have heard this, Rich. That. I don't know. I was at Cauliflower Alley 2 years ago, and Bob Geigel was there. And I had not seen... or talked to Bob Geigel, and we'd been 20 years, I guess, or more. And we were sitting in the casino talking, and he looked at me and he goes, he said, "What about them Oates boys?" He said, "Are they still down there?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "You know, I said me and Jerry do a radio show every Thursday night." And I said, "Ted lives in Macon. We talk periodically." And he said, "I'll tell you," and he looked at me and he said, "I'll tell you something about those two guys." He said, "You never had to worry about them being drunk. You never had to worry about them being high on some kind of drug." He said, "They showed up on time. They did what they were supposed to." He said, "If I had had 20 guys like that, I could still be in business." And that, you know, that was just, that's a pretty heavy compliment coming from him.
Well, we worked hard out there for him.
I love t-shirts, too.
Yeah, and I was fixing to say, went in the t-shirt business, too, you know,
let's
branched
get
out.
Started. Not on, I'm real happy to be in the Hall of Fame. Rich could have put me in the Hall of Fame on that. I don't know if he knows that story.
Yeah, we need to start a t-shirt division.
I'll go in first. There's no doubt.
I don't know. Les will fight you on that one because he's at least every other week on Ringside Rap. You know, I went into the T-shirt business with the Briscoes, and we were the first to do that.
Have you heard the story, though, Rich, of Jerry's venture in the T-shirt business in Kansas City?
No.
I know it's a sore subject with you, but you have to tell it there.
Rich, this is in 1974, right? And I don't know who all was doing T-shirts, but I got this idea to do some T-shirts. So we'd done a deal with Ted and Waskowski, and Ted hurt his shoulder and went to Japan, and we're waiting for Ted to get back. You know, every guy kind of had his town. Wichita was Ted's town, so we'd built this all up. Ted's coming back, and so we was on a tag match, and we knew the place would be sold out. So I had these T-shirts done up. I mean, I had boxes upon boxes of shirts. So it's going to be sold out, right? So I got there that night in Wichita, and I told Geigel, I said, I got to get somebody to sell my T-shirts. Pal, I can hook you right up. He said, there's a guy named Billy. Billy was a punch-drunk fighter. He must have been 70 years old, right? So he said, take all your shirts. We got there early because, you know, it's going to be packed. So we get there early, and I go up there and introduce myself, and I said, now, look, Billy. I said, I gave him the price of the shirts. Back then, I bought those shirts. I got to get it right now. Yeah, I paid $2 for those shirts. Back then, now. Had my picture on there, had my name, and I'd signed it, you know, good-looking shirts. And I said, Billy, I want to get $5 for these shirts. I got you. I said, $5 a piece. I got you. So it's about 30 minutes before the matches start, and Ted comes up, and he's checking the house. He's been gone a month. He said, just about everybody out there has got on one of your shirts. I said, you're kidding me, man. No. So it gets about bell time. Ted said, everybody out there has got on one of your shirts. I said, man, I'm starting counting up how many shirts I brought. I said, man, this is unbelievable. So the matches start. First match, second match, third match, have intermission. Geigel calls Ted outside. They have this conversation. I thought it was talking about, you know, about the house being full and this and this. So Geigel comes back in. Ted's following him. And now by this time, before they got to me, all the boys know what's happened. So Geigel comes up to me and said, pal, I got some good news and I got some bad news. I said, you know, I'm thinking it's about the house or something. I said, what is it? He said, well, the good news is Billy has sold all your shirts. He said, the bad news is he sold them for $1 a piece. I lost $1 a shirt. Still not that funny, but I mean, that's what.
No, it's funny.
But when I got home that night, my wife said, how'd you do on your shirts? I said, every one of them gone. She said, how'd you do? I said, I lost $1.
Hey, well, it's safe to say you lost your shirt.
Yeah, I lost a box of shirts. So that was my T-shirt business and the wrestling business.
I got a question for both Jerry and Bobby. From Jerry's perspective, what was it like with you and Ted working with Thornton and Charles as many times as you did? And Bobby, did you ever referee any of those matches between the four of them?
Those had to be awesome.
They were. Ted, he liked all that goofy stuff that Les would do, you know, those Cornish hikes, and they would do all these. I said, they would send word over, let's do this, listen. I said, get with Ted. He'll do all that stuff. But we had some good matches with them now.
I can't remember if I refereed any of those or not.
Oh, buddy, you had to. That was in.
I'm sure.
That's when we got back from Kansas City.
Yeah, I'm sure I did. At one time they had Les and Tony working with each other. They'd have them working on the first match, and they'd work against each other. And Les come to me one night, and he said, we're tired of working with each other. And I said, well, what are y'all going to do? He said, nothing, we're going to work with each other. He said, but you're going to call a match. And he would let me call the spots. So that was a lot of fun for me. But
how is Tony doing?
I
you know Rich?
I don't know anything.
He's in bad shape the last I heard.
Yeah, I can't remember who I talked to, but somebody told me he was not doing good at all.
Well, how's Barry Windham doing?
I haven't heard any more on him.
Last I heard was he's got feeling in his extremities, and it was confirmed that it was a heart attack, not a stroke, but stable conditions, last thing I heard. I know we're getting kind of close to the end of the show here, and there's really one other guy that we need to talk about, of course, that being the late Ted Allen. Huge inspiration to all of us in a lot of ways. I know we were all kind of close to Ted, and his death hit us hard. And I know, Jerry, I'd like to hear from you just primarily when you did your deal down in Columbus that I was able to be so much a part of and be around. I know that he was really kind of the veteran of the crew down there. And I'm guessing that's kind of important to somebody that was in your role, where you got a guy that you know you can count on all the way around. But, you know, just kind of talk a little bit about what Ted meant to you.
You know, I had known
personally
Ted,
and professionally, I guess.
I knew Ted a long, long time. And I don't remember. I know he used to come to TBS and do TV there. And that's when I first met him. And then when I come back, I'm up in my gym. I wrestle for him some. He'd call me, and I'd go wrestle for him, and then just ran into him all those years. And then when I decided to start trying to run some, he was one of the first names that I thought of. And of course, he welcomed the chance, and we really, really probably did more with Ted than we did anybody there, because he was so. Whatever needed to be done, Ted would do it. He wouldn't complain about, you know, whatever. And he was just super to work with. And that's when Ted came over for us and put him and Ted Allen together. And they had some barn burner matches. And that, you know, it was just wonderful. He was just a pleasure and. In fact, I only had one retirement match, and that was something that Jody Peterman did not far out of Columbus, and Ted was one of the guys we wrestled. He was one of the, he's, in fact, he's one of the last guys I ever wrestled. And when I heard of his death, I couldn't. Somebody called me that day. I don't remember who called me, and I was taken back. I just couldn't believe it. Now you're talking about somebody that loved the business. He really did. And I just hated that he didn't have a chance to go. I don't know if Ted wanted to go other places or not. I think he went to Tennessee for a while, and I don't know. But he would have fit in any territory. I mean, he was that kind of guy.
Yeah, he worked Memphis for a while. He was one of the original Nightmares. Him and Danny Davis, they're the ones that came up with that gimmick. And then Ted was so close to his mom, and he was so close to his, you know, just being at home. He left and came back home, and then he worked in Calgary. He went up and worked for Stu a little bit, but it didn't last long. He got ready to come. I mean, he just didn't stay long. He was happy around the house.
But he's a guy that, I mean, no matter when you would. If you needed a number of a guy, all you had to do was call Ted Allen. He had it. He had anybody's number. And I would always ask him, I said, we need a couple of new guys. Ted, you know anybody? I said, you know what we're looking for? Yeah, I know. You know, he'd recommend some guys. And he always came through for us. And I'll say one thing for him. He had work every week. He was wrestling somewhere every week. He found all these places to wrestle. I have no idea. But he stayed busy. He was a little hustler. I give him credit for that. He loved the business, and for what he was doing, I'm sure he did all right.
He managed to make a living at it until he left us. He was able to work enough that he made a living at it. Hustler's right, because he was always swapping and buying rings.
Rings all over the country.
Oh,
so.
Listen, I went and worked for him one night over in Center, Alabama. He called me and wanted me to come referee. And I said, I don't know. You know, he said, well, I want somebody to know what they're doing. It's a soul show. And he said, I'm going to do this. And then I said, okay. So I went over there. And he told me, he said, I need you over here at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I said, well, why? Sorry. He said, just come on. So I got over at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and what he had done, he had cut a deal with the coach. In the sixth period of school, they let the school out, and they told all the kids they could get in and see a wrestling match for $1. And he sold 600 tickets at $1 apiece, filled that gym up with high school kids. And we went out and did one match and shot an angle out of the match. Had some guy, I don't even remember exactly who it was, but some guy come out and interfered, and we shot an angle and did two interviews live right there in the place. And then they ran the show that night at 8 o'clock, and he had sold the show to the school, so he had his money before they ever rang the bell that night. But just always hustling, always he's the closest to Charlie Smith anybody ever met when it comes to making money.
Was you around him much, Rich?
Yeah, from time to time. Most of my interaction with him was at the get-togethers with Bobby, and of course, always down at Mobile. And then he actually contributed quite a lot to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. A lot of the Cartersville stuff, a lot of the stuff you see from that era, he provided that information. And as a matter of fact, I know there was a lot more that he had not gotten to us that he had talked about. And, you know, I'm hoping maybe one day I get with Karen and see if she's got that stuff, so we can continue adding some of that material to the site. Because I know he had pulled together a lot of information, and I had a lot of good stuff. So just always helpful. And you know what, you just always knew, no matter what, if you needed something, he was going to be there for you.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt.
He
was the guy, and if he told you he was going to be there, he was always early. He wasn't late. Never complained. Never, if he was on first or last, never complained. Whatever you needed, he was always there for you. And he was. I considered him a friend. He was. He really helped us, and he drew us some money there too. He really did. He really did.
You know, Scotty Riggs posted on Facebook today congratulating Ted to make the Hall of Fame, and he said, here's what he wrote, actually. It says, Ted is the man who I was honored to be trained by. He's one of the best gifted teachers in wrestling. He trained others such as Big Boss Man Ray Traylor, Arn Anderson, Ranger Ross, referee Randy Anderson. Trained me old school style, live in ring, in front of a live crowd. Pleased to know his memory is honored. He had more impact on wrestling than fans will ever know. I love you, Ted. And, of course, we all know as well that, the hugely talented Kyle Matthews that's big on the scene right now. He was trained by him as well. This kid's got a lot of talent, can go a long way.
Yeah, he does. Well, guys.
But anyway, guys.
Right to the wire. So, Rich, I appreciate you joining us. I know it's hard for you to do two nights in a row, especially since you didn't have Les to carry the load last night.
I don't know if you heard, Rich. We're going to have a radiothon.
Yeah.
We're gonna send Dick Steinborn and Les Thatcher to some therapy to try to get them to come out of their shell. And after hearing Rich tonight, I think he could probably be the third candidate. If we can get him to speak up and come out a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
We may have something. Rich, I've enjoyed this, bud. I really have. This has been good.
Rich, I'd like to thank you again for everything you've done for the business and guys like Ted and myself and Bobby and Ronnie and everybody that's gone in before us and us yesterday. I just want to thank you.
I'm glad you guys appreciate it, and as always,
I really do.
I always thank everybody that supports GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and any one of our radio shows, and ringsiderap.com. And you guys, I mean, you know, you guys came in and you've created a wonderful show here that a lot of people are enjoying every week. And just have you guys not only as friends, but helping out with things around GWH and being a part of the family. It's awesome. And again, thanks to everybody that you know, participates in the Hall of Fame process. And congrats to everybody that's honored and in the past or this year or in the future.
All right. Well, thank you guys, and we'll get together next Thursday, and we'll see what kind of trouble we can get in next week.
Sounds good. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Take care, buddy.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.